You asked me during a break, and I said, we got to bring that to the show. Am I allowed to be mad? Or you asked, am I mad about Junior Caminero? Because is he at 39 or 40 right now, home runs? And we traded away Junior Caminero, and there's some revisionist history. I think it's different. I want to be mad because our offense sucks, but I got to be fair. I mean, he didn't play in Cleveland. If he were a player in Cleveland, I think it's probably fair game because we get to see him. You trade away prospects. Sometimes your prospects end up being great baseball players.
Yeah, the funny thing is the difference between baseball and the two sports that are more in the national conversation in the NBA and the NFL is that when there is a trade of either young players or draft picks, we feel, even though it's totally not accurate, but we feel like we can talk about young players in the other leagues more definitively because we haven't seen any of the prospects in baseball. Very few have even seen them in college. And then, you know, in the minor league systems, guys are just gone. Let me know. Wake me up when they're on the doorstep of getting the call up. Like, then we start to pay attention to numbers a little bit. Someone like this, I can guarantee you, not one person called a sports talk radio show or even went to social media and blasted the organization. So on this one, no one can go back and say, I told you so. I knew that if Junior was given the chance, he was going to blossom. Like, even the Guardians admitted, they admitted 2 years ago that they blew this one.
The only thing I would say is if he were traded for help that would have helped in a season, like, you know, he was traded for another prospect for pitching. If he would have been traded for, like, I guess if he's traded for another prospect, I think you have a little bit of leeway there to be angry. But if he's traded, like if guys are traded, prospects are traded for guys who are supposed to help you in a season, then it's very hard for me to get upset. And I don't think that with some of the stuff that we've seen, and maybe I'm just sitting here making big fat excuses for Chris Antonetti and you think differently. Fine. 216-474-0092. I think that if he were traded for those guys who could help now, you'd even have less of an argument. But I don't think anybody was calling us up screaming about Junior Caminero saying that he was going to be a fantastic home run hitter. It sucks. But I thought about it like in the case with Lauri Markkanen. When Lauri Markkanen first went to Utah and ended up having a tremendous season and was all-star quality, I could see why people were upset. As much as I still thought it was revisionist, I didn't think that there were very many people that were yelling about trading away Lauri Markkanen at the time we traded away Lauri Markkanen and Colin Sexton. I didn't hear that much, but there might have been some people and they were upset, and you saw him play in the NBA. So yes, you have the right, every right, to be mad. And we can argue about it. Because I still argued, I said I'd rather have Donovan Mitchell. There were some weird takes at the beginning of Donovan Mitchell's time here with the Cleveland Cavaliers. This, it's like, yeah, that's unfortunate. Them's the breaks. That sucks. It sucks. He's a home run hitter. He's done fantastic. You're not going to be able to get him back. And now that I see Kyle Manzardo, and he's not an everyday player, he's becoming an everyday player, but he hasn't really been an everyday player. I see some promise there. I've seen him in the bigs. If they were to trade away Kyle Manzardo too soon, yeah, I'd be beside myself and upset because we're looking for any sort of offense that we can find.
But is anybody out there, I know in the past, and we have trusted almost to a fault the Guardians organization, but for good reason. They had proven themselves to be able to do the most with the least for so long that they won so many trades over time, so many of the prospect trades that is essential for them to be able to reload because they're not going to do it in free agency. So it has to be through trading for prospects, and sometimes they trade away prospects, and oftentimes in the past they've gotten stronger by doing it. Now, over the last few years, and especially when you play a team like Tampa, as a couple of your guys who you either gave up on, you know, way too soon or didn't identify as being strong enough in your farm system, that, you know, those chickens come home to roost on that. And then they deserve that criticism. It's just, is anybody screaming and yelling at the Guardians today over this one?
Like, they're disappointed. It's a layer that goes on to their frustration. Like, this has been a bad season, and this is a disappointing season. And I think for the first time in a long time, I think for the first time since Manny Acta, I think we have more questions than answers about the future of the baseball team. You know, when Manny Acta was gone, and then they brought in Terry Francona, I think that answered what a lot of people were wondering with the baseball team. And then they were able to develop nice players, and obviously they had a World Series run in 2016. But I think now the pitching staff, I got Gavin Williams, who in the last month has been as good and as terrible as a pitcher could be. I have Slade Ciccone, who was great in the month of July. You thought you had a real diamond in the rough there. That has gone to hell, at least in the month of August. Hopefully it's going to get better as time goes on. I'm not giving up on any of these guys. Logan Allen's, whatever. And then you have Tanner Bibee, who's getting in shouting matches in the dugout. Do we have a John Boy for that yet? No?
That's shocking. Normally they are on it.
Went John Boying earlier today and did not see one.
I mean, we should have a John Boy by now. It's been a couple of days. I'd hope they'd
sometimes he gets to it over the week.
Lip reading of a shouting match. What's
John
he got
Boy's
going
busy.
On?
He does a lot of Yankee stuff now.
They can't get, I mean, Chris Rose went over, works for John Boy. We can't get Chris Rose to do it?
They have a schedule breakdown of that.
Fine. Either way, my pitching staff, my rotation hasn't been great. And I believe that a lot of folks are wondering about the future. And for that point, I think we're putting a little bit too much on Parker Messick as he has started his career because we're looking for an ace. We've become accustomed in the last 20 years of having an ace on this
every
staff.
Year,
and having a guy who's in the conversation for the Cy Young. And we don't have that right now. And I think it scares me. And Owen brought it up yesterday. You know, this all really started with Tristan McKenzie and how that went south. And so I worry about that. I worry about, I think that the baseball writers have been too critical of Travis Bezzana for a while here this year. He's been injured. But when you get Travis Bezzana going next year, you know, he has to come to fruition. He has to hit. Kyle Manzardo has to have another good year next year to calm down some of this stuff because Francona had a way that he would calm people down because he had cachet. He had two World Series championships. You know, Stephen Vogt, I think, is a good man and a good manager, but that can wear thin.
Especially if you're not winning.
And when I have a 33-year-old guy, he's about to be 33 years old coming up on September 17th, now the clock is really starting to tick on the window being open for Jose Ramirez. And if you can't help this club keep their window open with Jose, the guy who took your hometown discount. Because say Kyle Manzardo does become your 40 home run a year hitter. And maybe he does. He will price himself out of Cleveland. He will be that guy. So what are we doing to keep our window open with Jose while we can? Because there's going to be no other hometown discounts.
No, the only chance they get a discount is if they did what, who was the team 3 days ago that just signed their rookie who had played in like 20 games.
If this is an 80 and below win team, if this is an 80 and below win team next year and the year after that, I think it's unforgivable. Now, I do wonder, and I brought this up earlier in the show, you can go back and listen to that, 92.3thefan.com. Is their business model, is it almost proof of you not caring about winning anymore? Because I still see a lot of young people. I've seen a lot of young people at the ballpark. And I think they're spending the $50 a month pass and going to the ballpark and using it as a bar, which, by the way, glad they're doing. You might as well have fun in the summertime in Cleveland. According to your meteorologist, say, you know, we only get 45 perfect days a year. You might as well spend it at the ballpark. That's great. But I don't think the poor attendance argument is punishment for the Guardians anymore the way that some of us thought before. Like, we're going to tell you, we're going to send our message by not going to the ball game. If they're averaging 24 or 25,000 next year, the same as they're doing this year, even if there was a hit of 23,000, I don't think it's going to matter that much. Now, if you're in the 17s and things like that, that's huge, and then you have yourself a massive problem there. And then you are still results-based.
Which they were in 2021.
But if you're not results-based as much as you are, what message am I going to send? And that's only going to kill the fever for it. Because before it was, hey, tickets are all expensive, so now you have to choose. Are you going to football? Are you going to basketball? Are you going to baseball? If you're at $50 a month or even $55 a month by the time the season starts, that's still not a lot of money to spend on a month of baseball where Owen's getting his money's worth when he's going to 35 baseball games a year this year. I mean, that's a lot. He'll probably end with 40 baseball games by the time it's all done. I mean, that's definitely worth the money.
Well, that's why I'm definitely wondering if next year they're going to take out the frustrations about this very mediocre, big letdown from an ALCS season, whether that's going to impact next year's numbers, or are they going to be pumped about having the young guys? Because you're going to have three young guys in the middle of that order.
I'll talk myself into being pumped about the young guys because I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. So as angry as I've been, I still think I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I haven't been as angry recently, obviously, because they've been better. The 10-game losing streak, that took a lot out of it. There was a lot of stuff that was said during that time, and I'm still going to get to you about that probably tomorrow about it because it still bothers me some of the stuff that you said. But It's been a good organization. For the most part, they've made the right moves. I'll still get excited about the future. But for the first time since Manny Acta, which is a bad, bad era for everybody, for the first time since Manny Acta, I got a lot more questions than I have answers. I didn't even bring up Stephen Kwan. And what are we going to do with Stephen Kwan? This is three straight years where he's cooled off in the second half.
Chris Rose joins us now from the NFL Network, called all the Browns games on the Browns preseason television network. Chris, welcome.
What's happening, man?
Hello, hello. Yeah, I mean, but it does mean that maybe Imani Marshall is on the practice squad.
Yes, I hope so.
Did anyone else, like, the minute Jeff was rattling all of that off, I was really waiting for him to end it with, like, he enjoys long walks on the beach. He was once voted the treasurer of his Rotary Club. Like, all of that cute kind of stuff on the end.
Cute. Love it. That's sweet. That's sweet.
That's Dan.
The way you were rattling it, I was waiting for him to be like, enjoys playing video games with his friends at night.
I don't know about you, Chris. I personally like some information with my sports, and you do that beautifully on all of your NFL Network stuff after the games. I was just trying to add some information there for our loyal diehard Browns fans. And Medigan decides to be a smartass.
I get it. I'm in. I'm going to let you two deal with whatever you guys have to do.
I'm in here with that toilet talk.
All right. So
gutter talk, locker room language.
Let's break down a number of things. We never saw Kenny Pickett on a football field here. And there was a lot of thinking that he was the favorite to be the starter coming into camp. And then he gets traded for the fifth round pick, basically, that they gave up to get him. What'd you think?
Well, there are a lot of people who are saying, well, what a misplay by the Browns. All he did was take reps away from a young player. Okay, let's – you just talked about facts and wanting to give people information. I'm going to give you information, okay? And then people can do whatever they want with it. When did we trade for Kenny Pickett?
Before the draft.
The middle of March, okay? At that point, how many healthy quarterbacks were on the Cleveland Browns roster?
It'd be zero.
That is correct. Then a month later, they signed Joe Flacco.
Correct.
Then after that, they draft two quarterbacks, which I don't know if people are familiar with how the draft works, but you don't know going in who you're going to get unless you have the number one pick in the draft. Because they're the only team that knows who they can get, because nobody else gets to pick ahead of them. So every team that makes a selection, and particularly in the third and fifth rounds when we drafted quarterbacks, you don't know that the guys you might want are going to be there, right?
Correct.
Okay. So now when we piece all the dates together, now we can put a quarterback room. So for us to have said that all Kenny Pickett did would take reps away from young quarterbacks, that just means either you don't care about the facts or you don't understand the timeline. So could they have, after drafting two quarterbacks, cut Kenny Pickett or tried to trade? Well, I mean, you weren't going to trade him because there was going to be zero value there. So now you have to bring him in. And I do believe that they felt like he could have won this job.
Yeah, I do too.
I believe that if he doesn't get hurt, I think July 26th, then he has a chance to win the job. So it just didn't play out perfectly, but it ends up being a wash. So I'm not one of these revisionist history people. It's just stupid. It might be great for content and clicks, but it's just so asinine, in my opinion, that I don't even give it the time of day.
I was hoping to see him. And the reason why we're looking for a quarterback, I thought, let's see what this guy can do. But I understand don't want to convolute the position with four different guys and then have two picks for next year and everything else. So
now what I would say is this, I will listen to the argument like, why did you go get Kenny Pickett? Why did you think he could maybe turn into the next Sam Darnold or Geno Smith? I'll have that discussion with you. That's perfectly fine. But I'm not going to get on the Browns for trying to protect themselves prior to the draft with a guy who they felt could win the quarterback job. I'm not going to do that.
Agreed completely. I am with you all the way when it comes to all revisionist history in most ways to look at it. The question that I have still remains, though, would you see them possibly bringing in another veteran quarterback to be on the practice squad, or maybe another some kind of developmental, or do you think the three guys that are there are developmental enough?
No, I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind it. It would all depend on who that quarterback is. Like, you want to make sure that they're a good sounding board for young guys. I mean, Joe Flacco has kind of laid out there what his role is. His role is to help this team win ball games. It's not to necessarily mentor these guys. He's been very upfront about that, and there's nothing wrong with him taking that stance. It doesn't mean that when Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders have questions and they come to Joe Flacco, he's going to be like, piss off, boys. I'm not here to answer your questions. That's not what he's doing. But he also isn't there to entirely help them with because he's got a job to do. So, yeah, would it be great if a Tyler Huntley would come back in some capacity? Sure. It'd be great. Yes. Yes, because that was one of the questions I asked both Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry. Stefanski in our production meeting and then Andrew Berry on the broadcast was, you've got parallel tracks running here. You're trying to win a game every week with however long Joe Flacco's your starting quarterback while trying to develop two drafted rookie quarterbacks, which happens very rarely in this league. How do you go about doing it? And one way is certainly to have a peer that can help them on the field.
Chris Rose joining us. You and Joe Thomas had a terrific conversation with Andrew Berry in that last game, and headlines everywhere where he said, we view four quarterbacks as an opportunity here. And we all understand if you get the offer, you can't refuse. You know, you make a deal. Is a fifth round pick an offer you can't refuse? Or do you think they just decided this is better overall for the football team?
Well, I think that things change, right? I thought Dylan Gabriel played very well, especially last Saturday. Agreed. I mean, when I watched him, I saw an NFL quarterback. I don't know how good an NFL quarterback I saw, but I saw one that can operate an offense. The way that he looked off defenders, went through progressions, ran a 2-minute drill. I get it. I understand he was going against guys who were getting cut. I understand that. But I'm just telling you what I saw and how he operated in offense. Would I feel great if he entered the game, if Joe Flacco got hurt week one against the Bengals and went in? No, I wouldn't feel great. But I feel like we could run an offense. And I think the minute that happened, then they were willing to go get that fifth-round pick back. And those are the sort of picks that are interesting. Because it could end up being a Puka Nacua, who was drafted in the fifth round, or for us, hopefully, year two of Jamari Thrash, or it could end up being a pick that allows you to move up a half a round in rounds three or four, that you've got your eyes on a guy that could, in your opinion, be a real difference maker. So those are important picks. Let's not just throw it away and say, oh, because it's not a one or a two or a three, that doesn't mean anything.
Chris Rose joining us on the Fan Hotline. Chris, would you look to reinforce the wide receiver position at all?
I don't believe so. It certainly wouldn't be my top priority. Cornerback would be my top priority. And I know one of the guys we picked up off of waivers. And by the way, Dan, Jeff's got ample information on him if you need it.
By God, I will. All right.
Good, I'm already excited.
It's about information.
I hope I could get his golf handicap.
Yeah, well, not listed on the sheet that the waiver claim went out on. That's still a room that I think needs help, is cornerback. I'm okay with the way linebacker has played out. I thought Easton Mascarenhas Arnold was really good in the preseason. I'm okay with him being a fifth linebacker. The problem comes if one of those guys gets dinged up. Then where do you go? How quickly can Winston Reed come back? So in order of position groups I'm most worried about, it goes corner, then linebacker. No, corner, running back until Judkins comes in. then linebacker, and then, you know, wide receiver probably. I guess that's where I go.
Okay. Chris Rose is joining us. I'm going to talk Guardians for a second. As poorly as they have hit the baseball,
yeah,
and as difficult as it might be, they're still not out of this thing, Chris. And here we are at the end of August.
No, it's over.
You think it's over?
It's over. Yeah, I do.
No chance?
Yeah, I watch a lot of baseball, obviously. It's part of what I have to do for a living. So I watch a lot of these other teams play. Yeah, they're not nearly as good as the next three teams that are not leading the division. They're just not close. And here's what I have to say is that a couple things. We did a really poor job in the offseason of overestimating guys on our roster that we felt like could take the next step offensively. It's been a really poor showing by most of those guys. And if this organization is serious about wanting to compete all year long and not just try and catch lightning in a bottle with certain guys, which happened offensively at times last year, then they're going to have to do a better job evaluating the players they have right now and go spend a little bit more money. Doesn't mean that you have to go spend $765 million on Juan Soto. We know that's not a possibility. But there are other good players in this sport that can upgrade your offense. Because right now, this is just not a good enough team. It's not good enough offensively. The other thing I would say is that I know the Bibee thing kind of took off. And for people to have said that Stephen Vogt has lost the clubhouse, these are people that have never, A, set foot in a clubhouse, and B, don't know what it would look like if you'd lost the clubhouse. So let's not pretend. We can all be disappointed with the year they're having. Go look at the roster and compare it to the other teams in the American League and tell me how much better we should be right now than we actually are. We're sitting a couple games under 500. I had them at 80 wins. I don't know where everybody else had them. I mean, you can be disappointed all you want, but be honest with yourself. Does this feel like a 90-win team? Because it sure as hell doesn't sound like it to me.
Always a pleasure, sir. What's up all next? Right, what's up next for you?
I'll host the top 100 show, the final, where we're going to, on Labor Day, give you the top 10, which is always fun and interesting. Then I'll get ready for the next Sunday for NFL, and we're going to be rolling. Still got dugout discussions going, and I hear the edit on American Gladiators is coming along very well. So yeah, we'll be pumping that up for 2026.
I can't wait. All right, bud. Thank you very much.
Take it easy, Chris. I'll let you know when Jeff tells me what the other hobbies of these players that they're picking up are. I'm really excited for which flowers they enjoy pruning with their grandparents.
That is excellent. Well, I want to compare it with what I used to do, so please let me know.
We'll let you know.
Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Chris Rose joining us on the Fan Hotline.
Things are starting to come unraveled. Well, they've lost six in a row, so they may have well come unraveled, but it started to unravel publicly yesterday as Tanner Bibee and Stephen Vogt had an exchange in the dugout in the fourth inning.
In between innings, Tanner Bibee visibly upset, frustrated.
Stephen Vogt?
Yeah, well, he was right behind him all the way.
That was not a pleasant conversation.
No, but you know what? That's what's been going on with Tanner Bibee. He came in and then said that, and the manager says, no. He put that to an end quickly.
Arch, thank you. I'm glad we showed it, but I'm glad you said that's normal. That happens in baseball at times.
Yeah, it sure does.
And it's to me, that's okay.
Right. You see, he came in, he was upset because of the things that happened, but you know what? That's been going on for too long, and his manager said, hey, you just deal with it. Move on. You're trying to win a ball game, man. You need to be all pulling the same rope. Let's go.
So that's Guardians TV. They're talking about Stephen Vogt. Stephen Vogt had his say-so in the post game yesterday. Here's what Stephen had to say about Bibee's blow-up.
I mean, emotions are high right now. Emotions are high with everybody. Tanner's one of the most competitive, fiery people I've ever been around, and he came in trying to pump the boys up, and I told him, not now, take it downstairs. And so we've already talked. We're good. It's one of those fiery moments that happens in competition in a long season, and Tanner's has been and will continue to be one of our best, and we know the competitive fire is what drives him, and like I said, emotions are high right now.
Was he trying to fire the boys up, or was he coming in bitching?
No, he was coming in bitching. Yeah. I mean, he was coming in bitching. I was surprised at the verbiage that was used.
If a guy walks into a dugout, like, let's go, boys! Let's go! You're not going to shut him up. Yeah. You're gonna let him do it. If he comes in bitching, you're gonna go, no, you take that down to the clubhouse.
Score a bleeping run.
Yeah, Ken's been doing a ton to fire up the 30 producers that's worked for him. Or he was just screaming, throwing
like
staplers.
He was firing staplers.
You know, there's a difference there.
Wait, that was me.
I know what you're trying to do, and I don't like
it. In this case, you know, I heard Dre say, well, it's normal. Yeah, there is emotion in 162, whatever. But this, you were about to use the term unraveling. This is unraveling. And we have not really seen that kind of emotion from anybody and then the manager to come out right after him. I don't care what he said afterwards. Like, vote was clearly ticked. It was clearly ticked.
Well,
so we haven't seen a lot of that. In fact, during the 10-game losing streak, we wanted to see it. You know, we wanted to see it when Jose Ramirez, which might have been the first big strike against the team this year, was when it looked like they weren't really standing up for Jose Ramirez at one point. And that launched the 10-game losing streak.
And he was guilty of that, and I stand by him being guilty of that. He should have came out and got himself thrown out before Jose Ramirez's benefit because of what had happened. And then Jose, remember, was out the next day after he got hit by that pitch. So that was ridiculous. But let me tell you this. I'm on Stephen Vogt's side on this. I mean, you have almost 7 ERA since the beginning of July. Tanner Bibee's been one of the guys that have been signed.
The guys
at the plate know they're struggling. There is no doubt you've gone 27 or 28 innings now without scoring a run, which is unbelievable. The guys at the plate know they're clearly pressing. Clearly pressing. You have Junior Caminero hitting another home run last night, who used to be your draft pick. So everybody's going to be upset about that. Not that the players pay attention about that, but that's the fans. And I don't need some guy with a 7 ERA since the beginning of July walking into the dugout, bitching in front of television where all the fans can hear him above the dugout. I don't need that. And Stephen Vogt wouldn't need that. And I'm glad Stephen Vogt did what he did. Stephen Vogt should have grabbed him and taken him down to the dugout, and they could have had it out there in the hallway.
Oh, you wanted to get physical.
I didn't want him to get physical, but damn it, they should have had the conversation down there. Stephen Vogt's right about that. You ain't making the situation any better by coming in here and being immature and starting to bitch out everybody for something that they know, because that's what it was. He gave up two runs, got upset because he gave up two runs because the game's starting to get away from him, and now he's upset with the guys on offense. Yeah, it's frustrating. It's absolutely frustrating. They know it's frustrating. They're all grown men. They get it.
Yeah, you said they're pressing. I mean, knowing that the pitchers at this stage, like, they're pressing. Every pitch has to be perfect, they probably feel like, because if they give up any runs whatsoever, that's the game, because they don't have an offense that can sustain anything. So this has been a disastrous moment. When we were riding high, I think, what were they? They like 16-8 at one point, or whatever their record was. We're like, well, they've got the best record in baseball in the second half of the year after the All-Star break, or in the American League, they had the best record. And the schedule looked so inviting for them to make a run, and they were feeling good about themselves. And we're like, all right, you know, they hadn't played their best baseball yet, so maybe they were finally playing their best baseball. But the margin for error, we always knew with this team. Mm-hmm. And they're every year, the margin for error with the Guardians is just going to be so small, where they can't afford to have any lapses. They just can't afford to have it. I mean, that's the end of a season. You know, you may be allowed one bad stretch. This team can't have two bad stretches, and they're having their second bad stretch.
You have a season that's off the rail, is what you're starting to have here, when you have that type of immaturity. So the whole thought about making the postseason, to me, is done. The whole thought about winning the wild card, getting into the postseason, that's over. Now it's time to figure out what you're going to do here for the rest of this season. Now, we're talking about bringing up young guys. I mean, that's where it is. Now, I want them to finish off strong. They're only two games under 500. I like them to try to approach 500 and finish out the year. But it's been a rough year. You had a look at it for a moment. You don't have a look at it anymore. You're losing to not good baseball teams. Which, by the way, Tampa Bay just is the same record as you, 64-67. So I don't know why we're so why we have this standard that we're so much better. I think maybe because we don't pay attention to other teams as much as we do pay attention to the Guardians. But paying attention to the Guardians, if I saw guys going up there and just not giving a bleep, maybe I would stand with Tanner Bibee a little bit on this. But I do. I think that they're pressing. I think that they understand how disappointing of a season this is, coming off an ALCS run. I don't know if we know the future of Stephen Kwan. I think that that's very much up in the air. I think that Stephen Kwan thinks about that. And again, you have
and
a
his
guy,
game. His game's fallen apart. Yes. His approach to the plate is totally
fallen
apart.
And that's three straight years in a row where to the point where I have to write it on the sheets going, hey, like, do we need to reexamine this? Because I was pounding drums for signing him to a long-term deal. And I want, and we're in the heat of things right now and things ain't good. I wonder how many people would disagree with that now as of today. Where it's like, you don't want to give him money, Ken.
Even though
you don't want to give him money.
It's always the case with every baseball player in this town going forward until we see a dramatic increase in payroll. You always want your guys to be really good, but not so good that you can't sign them. Now is he back into that area of, hey, he's affordable. Maybe Kwan is affordable.
Well, I'll fight folks on it where I'm thinking, because my whole thing is Jose. Jose's approaching 33 years old, so my whole thing is how much time do I still have with Jose where I can keep this window open? Because he's my only guaranteed Hall of Famer. He's the only Hall of Famer I have. Kyle Manzardo looks promising. George Valera, like you don't like some of the guys who you bring up. You don't know. You don't know what they're going to be. You hope, and you hope that it reopens that window. But I have such youth; I can only go with what I know. And I think that this is still a better team with Stephen Kwan. So I'll still fight people on it. But when it comes to the pitching staff here, you know this is. This is what's so bad and what I have to recalibrate. You do get, it's again, they're the Steelers of Major League Baseball. I grow accustomed to things being a certain way. And when they're not that way, it's very, very hard for me to readjust and accept. This has been a team that has developed pitching for the last, since this station has been on the air, and even longer than that. And right now, Gavin Williams is a roller coaster. Tanner Bibee is immature. And the other guys in the rotation, I mean, you're hoping for that. So I set that goal before the trade deadline. Oh, and I know you want to get in. I'll say this quick. Okay. I set that goal before the trade deadline. It's like, hey, I don't know what they're going to be for the rest of the year. I just kind of hope that this rotation gets straightened out. And I know it's a bad run, but damn it, now I'm feeling even worse because I got Tanner Bibee going in there and starting to get in people's crawl about all this stuff. Then I'm going to be feeling even worse about this than what I did already, what I even thought I was going to feel about.
Well, not only that, I mean, you wonder, too, when we talk about margin for error, they also can't have any margin for error with the guys they actually do sign. And Bibee got like $48 million guaranteed, which looked like, man, we got a great, great contract for somebody that could be the ace of this staff. And the minute you pay somebody, you always wonder what's going to happen. What's going to happen if we give him money? What does it do? Is the carrot not being dangled adequately? And like they can't make any mistakes with contracts. They make any mistakes with contracts at all. That's why the Kwan thing gets really, really interesting.
For the first time in 15, 20 years, maybe, right? You don't have a true ace. There is no ace on the staff. No. You had Bieber, you had Kluber, you had Justin Masterson. You had Cliff Lee, you had CC Sabathia. Right now, you don't have anybody on those levels at all.
216-474-0092. All right, whose side are you? Are you on Stephen Vogt's side, by the way? Or are you on Tanner Bibee's side?
Yeah, for sure.
Is there a side to take on this? Because I gotta take Stephen Vogt's side.
Yeah, I don't know. It's if Bibee was pitching better, he's just not pitching better. So you understand that his skipper is out there trying to do whatever he can to fix this team flailing away at the wrong time.
In between innings, Tanner Bibee visibly upset, frustrated. Stephen Vogt.
Yeah, well, he was right behind him all the way.
That was not a pleasant conversation.
No, but you know what? That's what's been going on with Tanner Bibee. He came in and then said that, and the manager says, no. He put that to an end quickly.
So I think this does mean a lot of things, and I think there's a lot of interpretations that have come out of this, and of course that audio courtesy of Guardians TV.
Mm-hmm.
On the nose, I didn't immediately hate it from Bibee, who I think has been frustrated all season long and needs to get his emotions out, but certainly from Vogt, who most of the time anyone can commit highway robbery in that clubhouse, and it doesn't seem like they get called out for it.
Well, they don't get called out through the media at all in the slightest bit, and so we don't know if he's calling out people behind closed doors, but like
I want to know what he said. That's all right. First off, I want to know if Bybee was angry at himself or was Bybee angry at the offense?
I think I'm going to go ahead and say, by the way he reacted, he was angry at the offense.
So I agree with that. That changes my perception of things. It's not as if Bybee's been so great, and he wasn't great in that moment, that he would get some sort of Peter went past, so to speak, in this scenario. Like you can't blame – the offense has been dreadful. They haven't scored in three plus games now. Not great, but you don't get to call out the offense when you've not been nearly as good as you're supposed to be, Tanner Bibee.
Unless you've been feeling the pressure of how bad the offense is, and that's part of your downfall. And this is where I'm going to give a little bit of empathy to the kid. I think the kid is incredibly competitive. I'm a little worried there's a little Trevor Bauer there with the temperamental
I've
stuff.
Heard other people say that too, and they made the suggestion. It's like, oh, reminds me of another guy that the initials of TB. And what I thought about with that was I thought about when Bauer threw the ball 300 feet from the mound in Kansas City, and then like you saw Tito, Tito's reaction.
Knew exactly what Tito said to him too.
But it felt very similar to Vogt's reaction last night in many, many ways, where it's like you can make of it what you want, but it just, they both had that same demeanor. And so I'm like, what did Tanner Bibee say? And how much of a noob? Noob is the wrong term. How much of a boob is he really? Is he always doing this?
I mean, I think he has self-destructed a lot this year, but I want to try and be a human about this, because if you're going out there and you're feeling the pressure of being an ace and you can't get any damn hits, I mean, I think that's a very human response, even if it's not the right response.
No, but I think he's smart enough to understand that nobody in baseball cares right now if he's not winning games in the win-loss column. Like, I get he wants to win games from just a personal standpoint. Paul Skeens has a ERA under 2 and has, 3, 4, 5 wins, whatever it is. Like, he had a stretch of 2 months where he didn't win a single game that he started with the Pirates playing, and it's like it shouldn't really dictate him or matter to him one way or another.
Yeah, but I think if you're not pitching well and you're not getting run support, I can understand how that crashes down on you. I can understand if that leads to a blow up. I really can. I'm not saying it's right. I really am not trying to defend him, but I am trying to understand it a little bit, because I think one of the things we've liked about Tanner previously is that he's a bit of a bulldog. Well, that doesn't always come out positively.
Also, the point is that I would much rather prefer that was him getting angry at himself. That was him getting angry in the moment that he wasn't able to locate some pitches, that he's now allowed 24 home runs in the season, which is just an astronomically high number of home runs to have allowed. I'd be more accepting of that than if he came back in the dugout and was trying to light up. By the way, you saw J-Ram's reaction in this? I mean, J-Ram looked like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, I mean,
between him and Bo Naylor, they looked like, what are you doing right now?
Did you see Carl Willis?
No.
Carl Willis did not look up once. He's like, I think he had like a pitch card in front of him, and he just had his head down. Mind you, the manager and your previous ace are screaming at each other in the dugout. Willis does not flinch. He does not look anywhere else other than the card.
Man, I've been there in fights, though. I've watched fights in this radio station where I'm putting my head down.
I was just like, Carl, no one's buying it. Everyone knows that you know this is going down.
No, but you can't smile during it. That's what I've learned, too, is I've been caught in moments.
You can't smile.
I've been caught in moments where people are getting after it, and then you give a little smirk, and then all of a sudden, you're the one in trouble.
Oh, no. See, because then if somebody yells at me, then I just yell back.
Yeah.
I've learned that. If somebody really, okay, if you don't deserve it and somebody yells at you, the most effective thing, it's like scaring a bear. Just yell back at it. Right?
You're supposed to get tall with a bear, right?
Yes, you are.
Hands up.
I do the same thing with Keith.
That's right.
If I feel like I've been wronged, I just really buck up, and the Bucyrus in him comes out. And he's like, okay, all right, we got a little too hot there. Let's chill out.
Can I get you some coffee, Mr. Britton?
Sounds like me doing that read at 5:20.
All right. That's good. As of today, I think this is a little deal, but I think tonight will inform whether it's a big deal or not. If this team comes out and plays as poorly as they did last night, to me, it's going to be a sign that they're giving in. When you have a moment like this, when you have a huge outburst between the manager and one of your best pitchers and a guy you've got under contract long term, how you react to it says everything. Because that moment last night can be the moment where they blew off some steam, and you know what? It turns out we actually needed that, even though it didn't come about the right way.
Kind of like a manager going out and getting tossed intentionally.
Yeah, absolutely. But
something
but,
to shake it up a little bit.
But in a way of, hey, we all want to win so bad, we're fighting each other. Let's let some of that steam off. That's only if you come out and just pummel the Rays tonight. If you get one hit tonight, I think it ended the season.
Well,
I'm not trying to be too hyperbolic because they were already getting their ass tossed.
I was going to say, losing 9 out of 10 and now what are we at, 5 or 6 in a row? That lost the season.
But like, I just continue to come back here. I'm like, come on, let's I love moments like this. I do. Like, as a fan, I love moments like this because it's like, all right, how do we respond? Right? Like, all right, that was not a good moment. It was not in the moment a productive moment. But like, this team decides whether that's a defining moment in a good way or a bad way, whether it just shoveled some more dirt on the coffin of the 2025 season, or do they actually show up and have some fight today? Because they've not had any fight, I mean, at all in the last 13 games.
Did you like that Vogt followed him into the dugout and kind of chased him around like he was trying to like rope in a puppy?
Yes. Yeah, I understand that, and I think this is one of the reasons why Tito was so great at being Tito, is most of the time there's a specific atmosphere that you keep. And so they always say this about coaches. He's the same guy every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes you have to lose your temper, though. Sometimes it's right to voice your frustration or to have a go at somebody if you're not seeing eye to eye. And if things have been bubbling for a while, if this is one of many outbursts, yeah, do I think players are going to look at that and go, oh, yeah, this is a job. This is...
yeah.
We got to bind our P's and Q's.
I mean, you just can't ignore it. And again, it does matter what he was talking about. I wish we knew specifically what he was talking about. But if he's going after the offense in that sort of way, you can't let him dog other players in that moment. Not when he's not doing his own job.
No, I know, but I just... I felt this way.
If that's Pedro Martinez in 0-1, for instance, where just no one touched him at all and he was dominating, he comes back to the dugout and has a few words for the offense. I think that's different than Bibee in this scenario.
Here's the thing. If Bibee's saying it, I'm going to go ahead and say the pitching staff has said this a few times without, you know, Vogt being an earshot. Like, it would be very human if anybody in that rotation or in the bullpen thinks to themselves, we can't get more than two or three hits in a game. This is no longer we're putting together quality at bats. We're just not performing. Like, I would, again, I'm not trying to excuse it, but given how bad they've been playing, I think I'd be more concerned if the reaction to it was nobody turned their head and everybody just kind of watched him and then kind of went back to what they were doing.
I guess it would have been different if Bibee's, you know, if the Guardians are up and they struck out in the third inning or something and they just got no runs and then he lost his mind instead of it being directly after Bibee failed to do his job.
I understand.
It feels like you're placing the blame in another spot to almost let you off the hook.
Now, I'm going to say this is a little deal today. I do think this stuff happens way more frequently than we realize. It's a clubhouse. Guys are not, you know, we say this about 53-man roster. The 26-man roster, you have fights, you have disagreements. You guys are trapped together for 6 months at a time, and you're not naturally all best friends. So with that being said, I do think if this is the we're going to lay down moment, I think it starts to paint some doubt on Vogt. And I don't know how far we go with that because I tend to think Steven's going to be back. But I do think the difference between this team laying down and dying from here and this team staying as buoyant as you possibly can and responding to this the right way, I do think that paints a picture of clubhouse health. And where people are with Vogt, where some of the players are. And I think that's a difference between how they enter the season and how you feel about Steven Vogt going into next year.
I mean, my big takeaway on this team this year has been just how up and down they are. I would bet they go on another streak, another run, kind of like they did a month ago, where they look like one of the best teams in the American League. Like, it's just how this team is.
So I think the difference between this streak and the previous streak is that the previous streak just happened so
early. This streak is worse.
Well, it's worse. It's also
in many
late.
Ways, it's worse.
It's like they're
losing 9 out of 10 is not losing 10 in a row, but this one feels worse, and this one feels like this is stamping down what your season is.
Well, and it's
right when you had a chance to.
And players are smart. They know what this losing streak could mean for them, and it's really hard for Vogt or for that organization, for anybody, for the leaders in that locker room, even today with putting Santana on outright waivers, it's really, really hard to pull the nose up this late in season. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but when you're already a team that has performance issues on the lineup, and We can't get Cade Smith to not blow a save every week. Mm-hmm. And Gavin's been bad the last two starts. Tanner's been bad since June. Slade Ciccone hadn't been himself. Logan Allen just is coming off a bad start. Like the later this kind of play happens in the season, we can always fall back on, well, there's 31 games left to go in the season, and that's true. Yeah. But this is the wrong time to have a bad stretch.
No,
this is the
sure.
worst time outside of like the last week of the season.
It's the perfect storm of suck right now. But that's what's been so interesting about this team is that they've had the perfect storm of everything clicking and then also the perfect storm of everything not clicking at multiple points throughout the year. It's just so odd how on the same side of everything it feels like they are at any given moment.
Tanner Bibee, Stephen Vogt. Their big exchange last night, big deal, little deal, or no deal. I think it's a little deal, but tonight and how they come out, it's not even just about winning. It's about how feisty, how competitive do you look? Because you've looked non-competitive for about 10, 11 games at this point. And in case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Okay, before we get into the whole Bailey Zappi rigmarole, the attendance issue I brought up with you, like, I think things might change here. Now, this is an early theory, and I may be wrong, but, man, I hope I'm right. Because I'm looking at a team, you know, Pittsburgh, if you go by the averages, you got to go by the percent, but they don't have it, so I got to go find the percent. Because it's like, okay, the average is Tampa Bay and the Athletics. God, what a great state baseball is in. You don't even have a home for one of your team. You guys are talking about expansion. Okay. Tampa Bay averages 9,800 a game. Well, they're playing in a minor league stadium
yes.
because they got the literal roof blown off their stadium. But, like, if you go to the averages, so, like, say Tampa Bay and Oakland never drew well really anyway, so they'd probably be somewhere in that category. Pittsburgh's still at 19-2 for a home game. Cleveland is at 25, right about.
By the way,
just over.
Pittsburgh's is probably inflated by every fifth start.
Well,
they're getting sellouts.
Okay, well, are we inflated a little bit because of Jose?
Oh, you mean game to game?
Yes, and I wonder if, like, I don't think you can sit there and be Pittsburgh every single year and then continue to draw decently if you're the Cleveland Guardians. But the Guardians are 21st in attendance right now. So they're still bottom third, but it's not like they're 29th like they've been in the past and things like that. And I have to ask, are you building a model that might be results-proof? Because, again, I went to a couple games this year. Owen goes to, Owen's probably been to, how many home games have they had so far?
I've been to about 35,
yeah.
I think is what they've my
had,
cap says.
They've had 65 home games, and definitely Owen's been to over 30. Owen goes to a lot of baseball games, and Owen has the monthly pass. And I think a lot of people, because I saw a lot of young people, man, and a lot of people who I don't think they weren't like wearing Guardians jerseys. Like, I think there were a lot of dates going on where maybe the girls are wearing some Guardians jerseys and things like that. But I try to observe this and I'm going, man, there's a lot of young people here. And I wonder if they live downtown and they got a monthly thing. And it's like, hey, if you can get the $5 beers and some of the other drinks there, like what Owen can get, it's like just like going to a bar. There's a baseball game around you. The weather's great. It's just like going up where they have a patio. I don't have to wait on a seat or anything and go stand there, and I can leave whenever I want to leave if we want to go somewhere else. So it really doesn't matter. Now, some of these are on Fridays where it's like, hey, that's an easy date. Baseball game, the games are over now in 2 hours. See the fireworks. Go out, do whatever you want. Hook up, whatever you want to do, right? But it's this model where your attendance might be pretty decent. I mean, 25,000 a game is still pretty decent in Major League Baseball to me. I wonder if it's almost results proof where, hey, man, you're probably still going to get 23, 25, even if you're not a playoff team this year, where a lot of us, when we watch baseball and we get mad at the Dolans, and we'd look at attendance as a punishment because you didn't put out for your baseball team. And I don't know if that's going to happen here. I wonder if this is a model where you're almost results proof in so many ways.
You know, I wonder, because it's a scary path to go down. I know it sounds good. Hey, you're going to get it regardless of whether you're good or bad. And we'll see. We'll see what if you know, this continues to be this, you know, 500 type season, which is exactly where they're going to be at now, even though they're going to have young, exciting, I would think, talent that are going to be there day one. Unlike, did you see the lineup they put out there yesterday? Lineup yesterday looked like that was going to be winning proof. Looked like there was going to be no shot they were going to pull through in that series, looking at the lineup they had out yesterday. But I'm not sure what's going to resonate. And, you know, I was talking to somebody in the know down in Columbus about their NHL ratings and their NHL, you know, attendance. They've always been able to draw, you know, decently for the Blue Jackets. I think they get 18,000 a game, no matter what their record is. And the guy said the problem here is that that's their fan base. Their fan base is like 30,000 strong.
And they're going to go no matter what. But they're not growing.
But that's it. They're going to the games, and that's it. They don't see that bounce in television ratings. Well, I think we all understand, like, years ago, Paul Dolan made an egregious mistake talking about, if you come, we'll spend the money. It's one of the all-time blunders.
Larry might have said that, but I'm not sure. I think Larry might have said
Larry,
just
to, it. Might be, yeah, might I don't be Larry, mean to split hairs been, with you here. It's been their ethos. It's been everything that guides them. That was an all-time bad PR blunder, and they're still paying for it.
Yeah.
I still hear it to this day that people bring
it's
it up.
Bad thing to say.
So, and they enjoy them. You know, that was another blunder, and that's why they really don't talk anymore, because they get killed every time they talk. And by the way, rightfully so. Yeah. If you open up your mouth and say something that that is going to discourage, you know, your fan base, it makes sense. But the reality is, as much as, hey, I said they're up 7,000 fans from 2021, 2019, they're up 3,000 fans, whatever. You can trace it every year. They're up. They're down about 1,000 from last year, but they're up, relatively speaking. The reality is, their real money is going to come from a local TV contract, and we don't know the future of that.
That's
going to have more to do with whether they spend money on their players than all of us, because they're not going to sell out Progressive Field. They're just not going to do. It's never going to be at the levels it was, you know, when there were no Browns here and the Cavs had been kind of irrelevant. That was a perfect storm when you had a new ballpark. It's never happening again.
By the way, you're probably right. Now, Pittsburgh plays in the same. I use them as the extreme example because they play in the same division as the Cubs, which are a top 10 attendance team. They play in the same division as Cincinnati, which is at 20th right now. St. Louis, which is usually pretty decent in attendance. And on the road, if you notice, they're at 31,000. So they're definitely there to see one guy every 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But also where it's like, I look at the Pittsburgh model, which is, again, extreme. I've been to a Pittsburgh baseball game. I was excited to see Gerrit Cole back in the day and Bryce Harper playing for the Washington Nationals back in the day. But I don't think a lot of other people were there to see the baseball game. They were there because the weather was good, the beers were relatively cheap, and the scenery there was fantastic. I mean, it's basically a state park is what it is with a baseball game there. And I think that that's part of the reason where there are hardcore Pirates fans, wherever they may be, not in this area, who are upset because they don't seem to pay the fiddler for them being a bad organization. I don't know if the Guardians, though, are going to pay this outrageous penalty for not going to the postseason. Because, one, I can't sit there and yell at you and say that it's a bad organization. It's not a bad organization. They've made some mistakes here recently. They may pay for him down the line. I get very, very worried about Jose Ramirez at 30, going on 33 years old next month and how long that window's open. So it means that Kyle Manzardo has to come to fruition. It means that Travis Bazzana has to come to fruition. And I don't know if they're going to get to their primes, probably not, by the time you're still in Jose Ramirez's prime. So you're trying to keep windows open here to be a competitive ball club. But with the model that they have, will it ever truly hurt? Will it ever truly hurt? Because say you do pass it on to David Blitzer, you're able to come to a price, you're able to pass it on. He may make it, but these results here, you're an under 500 team. You're not paying for it in attendance like you're an under 500 team. And back in the day, people used to be able to say, well, you're still, and maybe they're still will coming up in 2026. Back in the day, you would say, well, they're still reaping the rewards of the good season they had last year. Wait until next year when people aren't showing up. But if you have a monthly thing, that counts towards attendance. Mm-hmm. So if I have a monthly membership there of $50 a month to go, that's still going to count towards attendance anyway. And then the people are coming in or they're not coming in. And I think that that has been, I'm sure a lot of other teams are doing the same thing the Guardians have. I think that's a huge, it's a revenue stream certainly, but I think it's a huge game changer for everything else, because the tickets, if you're looking at a bleacher seat, especially secondary market, it's the same thing as what now, it would be anyway.
I would ask you, because you have a year like this, normally you feel the repercussions a season later, but next year you have a big time number one overall pick that at some point is going to be wearing that jersey. You've got Kafis, you've got DeLauder, I would expect. So all of a sudden now all the kids are up, and while that may dampen some expectations, maybe it'll be like, we're seeing what the young kids can do. Do you think their attendance is going to pay the price for this year, or do you think they'll actually be okay because of the young players they'll get to see next
year? From what I see now, but again, these numbers might be inflated because it's a monthly thing. Maybe some people are going to be upset and they say, I'm not going to pay my monthly price, but it's $50 a month if you're a baseball fan and you're going to a lot of games like Owen. Like, Owen, are you really that mad at the Guardians where you're not going to pay your $50 a month next month? Oh, maybe you are. Maybe you are. But
yeah, we've talked about it, and I was going to cut it off before this month because then I've already paid for next month.
But okay.
I won't be starting it to start the season next year. That's really how I set right now, and you know. March will be here.
We'll see if you get stir crazy and want to get out of the house.
Yeah, we'll see how it all turns out by the time it goes. Because the reason that we got him to start off with was it was cheaper than buying opening day tickets, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. for that first month. And then we just kind of fell into the groove.
Shh, don't tell him.
That's the truth, right?
Truth's the truth. I think that if you're asking the question, and Owen hits it, I think if you're asking the question in late August when the team has it done as well, I definitely think there's some fans who are probably like, I'm not doing it next month. But it then becomes a Browns thing going, okay, what are you going to do in September? Okay, what are you going to do when the weather finally turns in April
or May? And there are days that I've went and not spent a dollar inside the park. And there are days that I've went and I've spent way too many dollars inside the park. So it all evens out.
It all evens out.
Jim Tressel coming up in 15 minutes here. Very excited to talk with the old ball coach at Ohio State. Ohio State, where he's at with this team going into, or coming off the national championship, rather. We'll talk the Michigan punishment and whatnot. Urban Meyer wanted Jim Harbaugh to get what Jim Tressel got for Tattoo Gate, which was a 6-game NFL suspension. We'll see where Coach lands on that one. I would like to point out, advertising in general doesn't always work on me, but if you put like a product, if you like do a comedy bit about a product,
yeah,
man, I will go buy that. That just happened. I was watching a Pete Holmes, a very famous comedian, bit, and he does a bit about Cool Ranch Doritos, about how they're scientific. He basically called them crack, some version of crack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I went right downstairs. I was like, I got to get some of that crack.
I like Pete Holmes. I almost saw him at Hilarities with Adam one time, and then he canceled. Oh, because the pandemic happened. He canceled the show, and that was like my only chance to see him, and I never ended up seeing him. Like, that was it.
We're into the Pete Holmes stock.
Is he now too big? Like, if he came back, would he even do Hilarities? He'd probably do like a bigger room now, wouldn't he?
I don't even know. I mean, I guess every comedian with a podcast is suddenly huger than they were before.
Which is insane.
I mean, it's the ultimate cheat code. Mark Maron really laid it down for everyone. And then it was like, well, let's just follow that guy's path.
Well, and what's funny about that is, so I like Pete Holmes' podcast. I don't really like him as a stand-up that much, though.
Oh, really?
Like, he's fine. I mean, he's enjoyable, but he's not. Like, his stand-up is not anywhere close to what I liked his podcast for.
Gives me big John Ritter vibes. And I like John Ritter.
I like John Ritter.
I've missed
too.
John Ritter for a very long. We never replaced John Ritter of like, hey, we need to do a sitcom, but we need somebody that's really likable and really funny and good looking, but not too good looking. And that's like, let's get Ritter on it. Also, it was right in the middle of the rules for dating my teenage daughter, which was a very funny show until, unfortunately, until he passed.
Just, yeah.
Until James Garner and David Spade. That's not how you say it.
I do like David Spade, though. You talk about him. I like him.
In what way?
I always thought was funny. I think he's much funnier than people give him credit for.
In what way?
I knew you didn't like that take the moment I said it. For years, I think he was the butt of people's jokes. Well, first off, he's been in a couple shows that I like. Just Shoot Me was awesome.
Awesome. That's an interesting word choice for that show. It wasn't bad. It was a fine show.
I love Just Shoot Me.
That's the era of Friends and Seinfeld. Like, that was the era of great sitcoms.
It was unfortunately in a big time era of great sitcoms. But
now,
like,
today,
I liked Just Shoot Me. I thought Just Shoot Me was great.
Today, that'd be like in the top 5 percentile of network sitcoms.
You'd think David Spade would be like the comedian of our times if that happened right now today.
Yeah, but it happened 30 years ago, unfortunately.
He's done some stand-up stuff. He's done some stuff recently that I've enjoyed. I think he's way more clever than people give him credit for. And I knew I had to go. I knew I was going with a take you wouldn't like. That's why I had to present it.
I mean, I've heard of him, and I respect him and his bank account. Nah, we don't dislike David Spade, but you I really like David Spade.
I do like David Spade. It's not that I'm actively seeking out David Spade content. I'm not going to say that. It's not like Nate Bargatze, where like the moment he drops a special, I'm like on it.
We should just move on from here. That's so we okay. do have an update.
Wait, you don't like Nate Bargatze?
No, no, Nate's good. Okay. No. It was more I didn't want to turn it into a dump on David Spade thing because I think he's fine. He's fine. No. He's how is that like a mean thing to say?
Saying someone's fine?
Like, I'll watch his stuff.
Hey, I like that Jake Murren.
But if you're like,
he's fine.
But if you're like, let's build a night around David Spade, I'm like, can we not?
I'm not building. I don't think I've built any nights around David Spade.
Okay, so we're in the same ballpark.
Yeah, no, he's not somebody that you're like, hey, taking the wife downtown to see David Spade. I don't think that's the case. But it's more like in the era of I'm on TikTok and this person's popping up for 60 seconds and they make me chuckle. David Spade does that more than other people.
I think he's very witty. He's also from Arizona.
Is he actually from Arizona?
Yeah, that's really? The whole thing. You would know that if you're really a fan.
I'm not really a fan, apparently. So, see, does that build me back in good graces?
No. I'll never forgive you for that one line.
Just shoot me.
He's fine. Bob Nightingale, did you read his full article over the weekend? Because I didn't love it.
I read parts of it, and then I kind of got exhausted and gave up.
So there's the initial part where he says, basically, he alludes to an extension of the indefinite suspension for Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz, and that irritates me. Like, and he kind of bulks it up to, or chalks it up to, rather, the overwhelming amount of evidence that baseball has. It's like, well, why wouldn't you just announce the suspension? Meaning like, hey, this is final. They're not coming back. It's mm-hmm. no longer with pay. This felt to me like we're going to leak some stuff to put more pressure on the players to settle because we don't really want to have to make a firm, definitive statement on this. It felt very league friendly the way he wrote this up, because later in it, there's just a lot of speculation in it that felt more like speculation instead of journalism because it didn't cite anything specific.
Unfortunately, that's a lot of what we've gotten. Like, the breadcrumbs throughout this entire stretch has just been... it's been more speculative, but it's been coming from other places that are not your traditional journalist either, or your traditional baseball journalist. Like the report that I saw, I don't even want to go down. I'll tell you in between the road. I don't want to go down that road because I can't even say 100% with certainty that it's true. But that's where all these conversations are kind of leaving us at, in this in between where it's like we're hearing rumor about this and rumor about this, and we don't really know exactly what's going on, and we also don't really know what baseball knows.
I just don't know how 2 months into this whole ordeal, a month now into the Emmanuel Clase thing, at what point are you holding everyone hostage? And that includes Guardians fans, that includes the two pitchers, that includes the organization, with not enough clarity to act on any of this. And the idea that you're going to extend that out from, because again, initially it was, I think, the trade deadline, 7/31, to then 8/31. And now you're going to kick this thing into the offseason. Like, either you have nothing and you don't want the egg on your face of costing two players in the prime of their career, months upon months of their career, right? It's either that, or you have something and you don't want the black eye that goes along with suspending two players potentially for life or 100 games or 160 games.
If you have something, it's coming anyway. Like, the black eye is coming. Now, are you waiting to potentially drop that hammer when maybe the news will be different? Like, are you trying not to upset the storyline being the games and being baseball gambling investigations? Is that like the weight there? Because that's very unfair to Clase and Ortiz if that's the case.
Yeah, but what's crazy about that is, like, the story has never generated big headlines. I shouldn't say that. The story for Ortiz in Clase has not garnered consistent what's going on with this and investigative kind of jumps into this at all. Like, it happened, and then the news cycle talked about it for about 24 hours, and then that moved on. And then the Clase thing. And that was really only significant because he was potentially going to be traded 2 weeks later, and then people kind of forgot about it. So it's weird that you would like preemptively, well, we got to move it to when it can be just about this and not about baseball.
I wonder if they're waiting to have some sort of resolution with the sports books or some sort of agreement with the sports books and attached to it. So you announce some sort of suspension and some sort of, hey, all this happened. But hey, on the other side of it, we've talked to FanDuel, we talked to DraftKings, we talked to the heavy players in that industry, and first pitch betting is no longer an option. So here's mm-hmm. here's our resolve to it. And stuff like that just can't happen overnight.
Yeah, trying to tie everything up. At some point, I'm going to continue to go back to it. If you are holding too many people hostage with this story, to continue to do this through the end of the season, especially an organization that is fighting for its playoff life. You cannot tell me that guys in that locker room are not affected by the ambiguity of Class A and Ortiz, no matter what vote and everybody else. Everyone's going to give the baseball answer. Well, you know, it's not about who's here. You just got, it is only about who's here. You can't think about something. No, these are human beings. These are human beings. These guys are their friends. Carlos Santana talked about, yeah, it can be difficult. I didn't really get a chance to say goodbye to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, baseball's got to do this crap better. And even like Malik Beasley, to jump sports here, Malik Beasley getting cost potentially $70, $80, $100 million in free agency, and then he's cleared a month after free agency? Like, that's not the point of these rules, to punitively punish players who then get cleared.
No question. Every day that passes makes me think baseball doesn't have nearly as much as they thought they did. Because if they had the ammunition, they should have already made the ruling.
Jim Tressel coming up in 5 minutes right here on 92.3 The Fan.